athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day, whether you're listening in Pittsburgh on WGBN, how about in Nashville, Tennessee on Radio Free Nashville, or if you're listening on Sirius XM channels 142 and 84. Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. We got a lot to get to. The National Football League draft is less than 2 weeks away, and we're going to talk some NFL draft. As a matter of fact, we're going to be joined by NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed. NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed, you've seen him on ESPN, especially a lot lately, played his collegiate ball at North Carolina Central, and he's going to join us today here on the program. I think it's a done deal, pretty much, that Caleb Williams will go number one to the Chicago Bears, but what's going to happen at number two and number three? You have the Commanders. Will the Commanders take Jaden Daniels out of LSU? Will the Commanders take Drake May out of UNC? And in that third position, needing a quarterback, the New England Patriots. Will the Patriots take whomever the Commanders don't? Lot of questions. Plus, we've got a lot of talent, of course, in HBCU football, and want to get Jordan's thoughts on some of the HBCU players that could be drafted into the National Football League. Congratulations to UConn and South Carolina for winning respective men's and women's national championships. Look, I mean, South Carolina, when you look at the women's national championship game, no doubt from top to bottom, the better team. Look, Iowa, right? You've got Caitlin Clark. You've got a couple of other players, but in essence, it's Caitlin Clark and then everyone else. And Iowa got out to that really, really big lead and couldn't hold it. You knew South Carolina was going to come back, was going to make a run. The question was, could Iowa continue to shoot the way it was shooting behind the early play of Caitlin Clark? You knew at some point she was going to cool down a bit, and would some of the others be able to step up a bit? And look, she is just that phenomenal. I think when you talk about legacy and greatest players of all time, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't say that the first women's national championship game, at least from the NCAA level, because you had a league before that, AIWA, if I'm not mistaken, and shots out, as a matter of fact, to Cheney State, HBCU Cheney, played in the very first national championship game. Shots out to Cheney. Vivian Stringer was the head coach of Cheney back then. And just as a side note, think about this. At Cheney, and I believe it was at one time, you had Vivian Stringer as the head women's coach, and you had the legendary and the late John Cheney as the men's coach at one time at Cheney. That said, look, I don't know if she's the greatest women's basketball player to ever play. That's a big statement. Just because she didn't win a national championship also doesn't mean she's not, and certainly doesn't preclude her from the conversation. I mean, you've had many, many players to win multiple national championships. Again, but if you go back to some of those players that have won national championships or multiple national championships, they had more of a team concept than did Caitlin Clark. And look, she's going to be next up, the WNBA. I think she's going to bring some more excitement to the WNBA. Again, to me, women's basketball as a whole is on the rise now, especially over the last 3 to 5 years or so. To me, the college game is, especially this year, and going back to the latter part of last year, the popularity of the college game, I think, is more popular. But I think bringing a Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese into the WNBA this year, along with all of the other great players, and you've had broadcast partners really of the NBA and WNBA really step up. I mean, there were a couple, if I remember correctly, WNBA games last year that were on ABC mostly. You had a couple of course, on ESPN, but I mean network television, where you don't need, it's not cable, it's not satellite. It's free TV in essence. You had some games on ABC. I'm sure we're going to have some more games, especially because of the likes of a Caitlin Clark, an Angel Reese, and all of the other great players that you have in the WNBA. But the game has really risen, and it was an entertaining game for a while until South Carolina took over. Same thing with UConn. Look, Zach Edey was absolutely unbelievable, and I think Zach Edey had more help than Caitlin Clark had if we were going to compare the two. He definitely had more help, but he was dominating. But that's a UConn program that is absolutely dominating, has won all of its games by double digits and handily. And it was a good game early on, and then you saw UConn there in the second half, in the early part of the second half, start to kind of pull away. And it's just not only a really good team, but a very, very well coached team as well, with Hurley there as the head coach. So we saw some excitement from college basketball. The college basketball season is over now, and we'll, of course, basketball-wise, move our attention now to the NBA. Even though the college basketball season is over, doesn't mean stories still aren't permeating throughout college basketball. And on the same night that South Carolina won the national championship, it was reported that John Calipari was leaving Kentucky to go now to Arkansas. Okay, and remember, a couple of weeks ago, talked about this extensively, that I felt bad for the fan base, because look, Coach Cal is great. He's got you talk about guys that can talk, can speak, can market. Coach Cal is maybe the best coach in the country in terms of doing that. At the end of the day, there was only one national championship at Kentucky, and all of those years at Kentucky, there was a lot of notoriety associated with Kentucky because of Coach Cal, then again, Kentucky had won national championships and it had notoriety. And, I go back to the season when Kentucky went undefeated going into the national championship game and ended up losing that national championship game. And while, a couple of days after Kentucky lost, the AD said, hey, Coach Cal is our guy. He's our guy moving forward. But I think, again, I'm not a Kentucky fan at all. I'm not against Kentucky. I'm not a fan. But just as, I was trying to kind of express what I thought maybe some Kentucky fans were feeling, because again, if you don't win it, it's a hard thing to win a national championship. Nobody's saying You have to win a national championship every year, but you can't get bounced out of the first round. Not really. I'm not going to say on a regular basis, but it's happened far more frequently than it should have, and far more frequently than the talent that Coach Cal and Kentucky had on the court would have indicated that it should have happened. And so I think the fan base, still, while the vote of confidence came from the AD, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, look, those donors, especially those donors that are giving big bucks, can't be happy. Can't be happy. You can't be happy losing. Listen, at the least, I think Kentucky should have gotten to the round of 16 and would have needed to get to the round of 16 to kind of quiet the noise. I think a Final Four appearance would have ceased the noise, and an Elite Eight appearance maybe not ceased it, but it would have been even better than a Sweet 16 appearance. The Wildcats lost in the first round. That is absolutely unacceptable in Lexington. Big shouts out to our station in Lexington that carries the program. But look, he's out. He's going to Arkansas. Arkansas right now needs a boost. They can't go wrong. I believe he takes like $1.5 million pay cut, but with incentives can make that up. And I hadn't read the contract or really any of the story related to it. I'd like to see or know the particulars in terms of what's in the contract, where the incentives would kind of kick in and what that looks like. But look, Arkansas has no scholarship players, by the way. So he's building from scratch. But I'm sure the expectations. Now, Arkansas has had some good years. You know, you go back to some of the Nolan Richardson years, even more recently with Eric Musselman, some solid years, just as it didn't go as it had planned the last couple of years. But, you know, Arkansas is no slouch either. So I'm sure, you know, Arkansas just didn't say, hey, we're going to give you the bag in terms of incentives, but some reasonable incentives to kind of get Arkansas back. And we'll see. I mean, he's going to be able to recruit players. Arkansas is going to be relevant, like Rick Pitino was able to do with St. John's in his first year. No, they didn't make the tournament. St. John's did not make the tournament, but St. John's is relevant again, and Coach Cal's going to do the same thing at Arkansas. Look, we're going to step aside, take our first break. Come back, we're going to switch gears, talk some National Football League draft. NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed is up next.
It all, I won't leave a breadcrumb. What I thought of, said some. Thought of, said some. G block, all we know is red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum. G block, all we know is red rum, red rum, red rum.
Do you feel like the cost of car ownership has gotten out of control? Take charge by refinancing your auto loan today. One call to Rate Genius can save drivers an average of $1,200 per year. The loan specialists at Rate Genius have helped people for more than 20 years replace high-interest auto loans, lower their payments, and spend less in interest. Rate Genius works with over 150 lenders to find you the most competitive terms. Customers lower their rate an average of 3 percentage points. That's huge savings. It's absolutely free to apply for refinancing through Rate Genius, and when you refinance your auto loan, you won't owe a payment for 45 days. Make the 5-minute no obligation call today and get on your way toward affordable car ownership. Call 800-958-0341. 800-958-0341. That's 800-958-0341. Rate and payment values are calculated by using the average savings for customers from January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2022. Not all applicants qualify for a loan or rate savings. Actual offer terms, including APR, are determined at the time of your application based on credit worthiness. Value of the vehicle loan term and other factors.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Chris Crenshaw, the head baseball coach at Southern, a huge win against LSU, ranked number 18 in the country.
Yeah, it's a big win for us. It's a big win for the university. I'm glad we was able to get out there and play good baseball.
Is it just another win for you?
No, it ain't just another win. It's a big win. I don't want to sound like it's not a big win, but it was a big win. But to me, getting ready for this weekend is important. Because we played good on Monday, that means we got to go out and play good again, because now it's expected.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
Now, back to From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Dr. Dre, do you remember you was broke and the whole rap industry thought y'all was a joke? Me, D.O.C. and D.O.G. sat and made lyrics to replenish your name like Gatorade. But you got thirsty for the money, punk, and disrespect the three that put your back upon it. Always talking about your word good as gold. Wash, fold, put it out the dry, you lie. I'll put that on my mama and my baby.
We're about a couple of months, a couple of weeks away from the National Football League drafting, as we do each and every year here on the program. We talk NFL and specific to HBCU players as well. And we're joined by a gentleman, as a matter of fact, an NFL draft analyst for ESPN, a former quarterback at North Carolina Central, also an assistant coach before he got into this side of the business. He is Jordan Reed, and he joins us here on Box to Row. What's going on, Jordan?
It's a pleasure being here. You know, I always love talking to you. We have our random moments of where we run into each other. I remember, I believe it was my senior year. It was 2013. We actually did an interview inside of O'Kelly Riddick Stadium. I don't know if you remember that, but we've come a long way. We've known each other a little over 10 years now, but it's been fun to see how far you've bought your program as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yes, thank you, because, you know, sometimes, man, I mean, you get older, you see the gray, right? You see the gray. So, yeah, I can't remember. I remember when you played at Central. You were right before Central made, you know, that run, but part of building that, mm-hmm. right, until what Central ultimately became. Let me even start here. What do you remember about those days as the quarterback at North Carolina Central?
It was fun times, man. I love Durham. I love everything about Central's program. And I was at the beginning stages of them transitioning over to Division I. It was one of those, it was that five-year transition period when they were coming over from being Division II to Division I. So I was part of that, the foundational stages of them transferring over into the MEAC, back when I believe it was 12 teams back then, if I'm not mistaken. Back when they had 12 teams. So we rotated who we played every 2 years. So just those road trips of going to Delaware State and Bethune-Cookman and Florida A&M and all these other different schools, it was a fun time. It was the best 4 or 5 years of my life, and I have no regrets of playing at North Carolina Central University.
Yeah, that's right. The MEAC was at its height. Central had joined in 11 permanently. Savannah State had joined also. That was when the MEAC was sort of at its height. So how does one go from being an assistant coach? So you had your playing career, right? How does one go from being an assistant coach at North Carolina Central to what you're doing right now? See you on, you know, ESPN.com and SportsCenter and all of the ESPN shows quite often talking NFL draft.
It's been quite a transition, honestly, just because there's so many different variables and things that went into it. I stopped coaching in 2018. That was the staff that I was with. That was our final year at Central before Trey Oliver transitioned over, and he's doing a heck of a job there now. But I was there during the height of the Jerry Mack era. So we won 3 consecutive MEAC titles from 2014 to 2016. 3 of the best years of my life. I think 3 of the best teams in school history. Unfortunately, we did come up short in the Celebration Bowl against Grambling. That's one game I still have not watched back over until this day. It's just an experience I don't want to relive again. I have no regrets as far as those 6 years that I spent when I was coaching at Central. I had a ton of fun when I was there. But being on the media side, it has been a little bit of a transition for me, just because during my playing career and my coaching career, media and journalism is something that I've always wanted to get into, but I just couldn't put it at the forefront, just because obviously I had other obligations at the time of my playing career and, of course, with coaching. But took a leap of faith, started a social media account on Twitter. It was called Twitter back then, called X now, whatever you want to call it nowadays. So started posting clips, doing HBCU player rankings, doing HBCU player scouting reports. And lo and behold, out of nowhere, ESPN came out of nowhere and said, hey, we're looking for somebody to be the understudy of Mel Kiper. And I thought I was being pumped at the time when they came and asked me that question, but just took a leap of faith and it ended up paying off for me.
No, it's a beautiful thing. And I got to ask you this. Who gets the responsibility for Malcolm Bell? Like, Malcolm Bell was great. Okay.
Yeah,
he came after you. Is it TC or you that gets the responsibility for the success that Malcolm Bell had?
Well, I used to always tell TC, so I was a graduate assistant for 2 years under TC when he was the offensive coordinator at Central. And I always tell him I did the legwork for developing Malcolm, just because my first year I was a GA, I worked with quarterbacks, so I was hand-to-hand with TC. But Malcolm was there during my last 2 years of my playing career. So he essentially was a little brother to me, taking him under my wing and just making sure that the program was going to be in good hands once I did graduate. So him seeing the heights that he took the program to, it wasn't surprising at all. And I think he's without question one of the best quarterbacks and best players in program history.
Look, I'm currently in the play-by-play voice for A&T football. Malcolm Bell was an Aggie killer. Okay. This is, you know, it's just what it was. Jordan Reed, of course, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, joining us here on the program. Okay. Jordan, we're going to talk about some of the HBCU kids, of course, as well. Is there any reason to believe that Caleb Williams will not be drafted number one by the Bears?
I would be really surprised if he's not, and all signs point to Caleb being the number one overall pick. He's done everything that he's needed to do throughout the pre-draft process, and they're really enamored with Caleb. We saw it during the pre-draft stuff. We saw the contingents showing up at his pro day. Keenan Allen, who was recently traded from the Chargers to the Bears, showed up at the USC pro day. So all signs point to Caleb being the number one overall pick. And Donald, I would be really surprised if that's not how it turns out on day one of the draft.
So my team is, you know what, my team is the Commanders. I mean, I smile because we've got the number two pick, but I frown because I had to go through what happened last season. So it's, you know, it's bittersweet, right? I mean, Jaden Daniels to the Commanders at number two.
Yeah, it's a possibility. It's going to come down to him and then also Drake May of North Carolina. It's just a matter of which quarterback do you see better. But I don't think they can go wrong with either one of those guys. They can go with the electrifying Lamar Jackson type of quarterback in Jaden Daniels, or they can go with the Josh Allen, Justin Herbert ceiling type of quarterback with Drake May. I don't think they can go wrong with either one of those players. Regardless, we know Washington has a huge need at quarterback, but they can't go wrong with selecting either one of those players at number two.
Right, and it's interesting. Can you sort of, why more recently, and obviously not from you, and I'm talking to you right now, and you say Caleb Williams should go number, anything can happen, but you're pretty, you feel pretty good about Caleb Williams going number one. But in more recent weeks, we've heard where possibly Jaden Daniels could go number one. My question, I guess, is what are some of the pros for both of these guys? Like, you know, and furthermore, I mean, what would make possibly the Bears decide to go with Jaden Daniels?
Well, I think it's just the electrifying ability with him. And you see on his highlights of how he's able to create and just what I call slice and dice defenses up with his running ability. And he's one of those players that is lethal inside and outside the pocket. He led the FBS in touchdown passes inside the pocket with 35. But also, he was great as far as a runner last year, too. That's really where his game, that's really where he took his game to the next level, not only as a thrower, but as a runner. I mean, you could watch the Florida game and plenty of other games that he played throughout the season of where he had 400 or even 500 plus total yards in those matchups. So it's just his dual threat ability as not only a passer, but also a runner. I think he's by far the most explosive of the bunch in this year's class.
Who do you have the New England Patriots taking at number three?
Right now, I would have them taking Drake May, just because looking at their regime and what they have previously have catered to, he's the prototype of what general manager or the player that's in charge of their draft this year, Elliott Wolf. He's stylistically Drake May is what he has preferred in years past. And he is the son of Ron Wolf, legendary general manager of the Green Bay Packers. Stylistically, Drake May is what he has really catered to in years past. So right now I would have them taking Drake May at number three.
And some, again, it just in talking, I know you're going to come out with your final mock draft on April the 23rd. You have one that's currently out, but some of the talk is Drake May is kind of falling back. So what are, you know, how do you compare Drake May and Jaden Daniels?
Well, I think with Drake, there's a lot of decision-making questions and then also accuracy question marks with him, just because he'll have one play of where he throws a 60-yard bomb to a wide receiver that's absolutely perfect. He drops it right in the breadbasket. And then the very next play, he'll throw a simple 5-yard route into the dirt. So it's like, man, these shades of highs and lows with him, is he ever going to figure it out? So that's the big question mark with Drake. Can he just consistently be a model of consistency and just eliminate those consistently inconsistent moments? That's going to be the big question mark about him. But with Jaden Daniels, he made that big leap, like we've seen with Joe Burrow, another former LSU player that went number one overall in the draft a few years ago. He made that big leap that we did not see during his first few years, even going back to his career at Arizona State. So it's just the consistency with Drake May, and can he bundle all of those traits together and reach that Josh Allen, Justin Herbert type of ceiling that we essentially saw from Jaden Daniels already last year.
Former North Carolina Central quarterback, current NFL draft analyst for ESPN, Jordan Reed, joining us here to talk some National Football League draft here on the program. How good is Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Best player in this draft class, regardless of position. Marvin has been my best player at the top of the draft board since August, since I started watching these guys last summer, and that has not changed at all. I think the testament of how good he is that everybody in the stadium knew last year who was going to get the ball for Ohio State's offense. It was number 18 in those Buckeye helmets, and he was able to produce. And Ohio State had subpar quarterback play last year, going from C.J. Stroud, who had a phenomenal rookie season last year for the Houston Texans, to Kyle McCord. Kyle McCord was not a very good player for them last year, but Marvin was still able to produce. You talk about elite hand-eye coordination, a big wide receiver that has small wide receiver movement skills. And, oh, yeah, the genes and the makeup are not too bad either. You talk about somebody that has a Hall of Famer as a father, that's something that's always going to give him some extra points in draft rooms.
We're talking National Football League draft with Jordan Reed, NFL draft analyst for ESPN here on the program. Jordan, let me step aside and take this break. We're going to come back. I want to talk more with you, a couple of other names, and then I want to talk about some of the HBCU kids that have an opportunity to get drafted. Keep it locked to Box to Row.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
I'm excited I get to play for them. They support us in everything we do. You know, it's a joy to, you know, go to work and know that you're going to be, you know, they're going to cheer for you as loud as they can, no matter who you're playing.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, what HBCUs mean to people, you know, and having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, you know what I'm saying, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent. And often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light and people want to feel like they want to be here. And so putting it on the national stage is really big. You know, most of the time these kids don't get televised games, you know what I'm saying? So be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, you know what I'm saying? And getting, you know, the NBA, you know, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully like build this thing bigger.
The one and only Stephen A. Smith.
It's my sincere hope that when my ride ends, I'll get a big hug and a big thank you for what I tried to do for other people when I was at the top. Because that's all you have to lean on at the end of the day, bro. I mean, I plan on being successful for years to come, but it ain't gonna last forever. And, you know, when my day comes, when it's the end of the road and it's time for somebody else to be in my seat, in my chair, you know, it's my hope that whoever that person or those people are, people that knew I cared about them and believed in them, to help them get to this place.
Hey, Spike Lee.
Thank you. I haven't heard that. I mean, I've been on radios all over the nation. Thank you for that question. I'm a third-generation Morehouse man. I was taught to speak your truth, and that there's very special about being a Morehouse man, the same way you feel about your school, the same way we feel all about our respective historic black colleges. That would have been my first choice anyway, and I'm proud to be a Morehouse man.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
That is the voice of Steph Curry.
Your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. And, it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
The one and only Michael Strahan.
Always good to talk to you. Hopefully next time it won't be, what, 14 years. You can get to it. You know, and it's good, and you're encouraging people to be better and do better, and that's what I love, man. So thank you. I appreciate you.
As we're joined by the one and only Jerry Rice. What do you remember most about those days at Mississippi Valley State?
What is going on at Mississippi Valley State University? Why are these guys putting up unbelievable numbers? And that brought awareness to the school, and after that, I got drafted to the San Francisco 49ers.
Dave Roberts, manager of the L.A. Dodgers. To be person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers, what does that mean to you?
I think the first thing that comes to me is responsibility. With recency and kind of the social, the racial issues that we're having that have really come to light, which is, I believe, are good things. I think that it's a responsibility for me to be the first manager of color for the Dodgers. There's not many of us in baseball. To do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
Oh, man, thank you for having me play in a real way. I mean, I'm so honored. You Football League has done so many wonders. We got over 200 kids that have graduated from high school. We have over 50 kids that have going to Division I.
NBA All-Star Chris Paul.
That was great to bring it back to Winston-Salem State University, a black college. Something that my city had never seen before, may never see again, and just having a up-close and personal feeling with LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Melo. It was exciting. I'm grateful for those guys coming out.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player, but for me it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in the first 8 games. And, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's From the Press Box to Press Row, real, relevant radio. Welcome back to Box Row. We're talking some National Football League draft with Jordan Reed, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, former North Carolina Central quarterback, understudy to Mel Kiper Jr., as he put it. Is doing a phenomenal job, as a matter of fact, for ESPN. Who are some, before we talk about some of the HBCU players, Jordan, who are some of the maybe players that are being slept on in this year's draft that could maybe be sneaky first day guys or early second day guys?
That's a great question. I think there's quite a few guys that I think are being really slept on right now. The first one is Jerzon Newton of Illinois, and he was seen as consensus first round guy coming into the year, but we just haven't seen him during the pre-draft process. So he had surgery for a Jones fracture in his foot that he played all of last season through in January. So we weren't able to see him at the combine, and he's expected to have his pro day for NFL teams on April 16th. So next week, he'll get his opportunity to show that he's fully healthy. And if he shows that he's fully healthy, I think he's a player that's going to continue to climb up those draft boards. So keep an eye on Jerzon Newton, a defensive tackle from Illinois.
Okay. Let's transition a little bit. We talked about yourself, then Malcolm Bell, then Davis Richard. Like, he, you know, first time saw him play, you know, he was, I think, third on the depth chart, came in, played well. This was 2019. You saw him and could say, man, this guy can really, really play. And we're here now. And I got it. He got injured, you know, in the All-Star game, in the HBCU game a little bit. How good is he? What opportunity does he have to play in the National Football League?
I think he has a good one. And it's unfortunate that he did suffer the injury in the HBCU Legacy Bowl, just because there were a lot of people looking forward to seeing him throw at the Pro Day, which happened a couple of weeks ago. But unfortunately for him, he's not going to be able to participate in that type of stuff. But I still think he's going to get an invitation to rookie mini camps. I've actually had an opportunity to talk to some people close to him, and he's rehabbing right now. I was at a practice for North Carolina Central spring practice a couple of weeks ago, was able to see him. He's in really good spirits. So a lot of teams have had a lot of good high remarks about him. And I think he's one of the more highly ranked HBCU prospects in this overall draft class. And we haven't seen an HBCU quarterback drafted since 2006 with Tavares Jackson, when he was coming out of Alabama State, which is a very long time. So I'm definitely cheering for Davius. He's a player that I've had an opportunity to develop a relationship with, especially with him being in the NCCU quarterback fraternity. And he's arguably the best one of the bunch over the 70, 80 years of the program. So he was a very, very good player for the Eagles over the past four seasons.
Yeah, no doubt. Rest in peace to Tavares Jackson. I remember that draft, and Minnesota moved up to take him in that draft. Look, when I looked at him on the college level, even this year, Davius Richard, I'm talking about, clearly the best player on the field, clearly the best player to me from what I saw. And there's some guys that can really, really play in HBCU football. What did he do, particularly his senior year, that translates to the National Football League?
Well, I think it's just his steady progression and his development as a passer. I thought when he first got to Central, he was really raw in that sense. The accuracy wasn't great. The arm strength wasn't great, but what you saw is his body not only developed, but as his body and his physical maturity got better, everything from his development followed along and expedited that process too, to where he played really well as a passer last year. We already know he's dynamic and he's lethal as a runner. That's just an added element to the package that he does provide.
Jordan Reed, again, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, joining us here on the program. Before I ask you about some other guys, I want to, generally speaking, Sundiata Anderson, out of Grambling, really, really good player, SWAC player of the year, HBCU All-American, has turned some heads in some of these All-Star games. You know, your thoughts on what he brings to the table?
A lot. And he's one player I had an opportunity to see at the East-West Shrine Bowl down in Frisco, Texas. And I thought he's one of the better players there, just because you see the dynamic ability, the explosiveness, the hand maturity, and just how he's able to get off of the ball naturally. And that's something that you saw on his Grambling tape frequently. He just understands how to get to the quarterback. And we know once you get to the quarterback, if you're able to do that consistently, you're going to be paid a lot of money in the NFL. So he's probably going to be a later round guy, maybe sixth or seventh round, but it would not surprise me if he ends up developing and sticking on the roster long term.
Anybody you have higher than that? Who is somebody HBCU wise that could go higher than maybe third day? Anybody?
Well, I don't see anybody going obviously first or second round. I think we'll probably get our first guy maybe drafted in the sixth round. That's the earliest I see right now, but there's two names that are a possibility. And the first one is Anem Dankwa. He is an offensive tackle from Howard, who I thought played really well last year. 6'8", 360 pounds. I mean, he's a mammoth sized human being. He's another player that I had an opportunity to see at the East-West Shrine Bowl. He held his own, was really good in pass pro, moved really well, especially to be a bigger offensive lineman. We know he's a mauler in the run game as well. That's something that he really made a high remark in during his time with the Bison up in D.C. And then the other, who I was really surprised by when an opportunity to see him throughout the pre-draft process, was Mikey Victor out of Alabama State, who played corner for the Hornets, but I think he's going to be a safety on the next level. And he had an opportunity to participate at Alabama's pro day for the Crimson Tide, and I thought he held his own. He ended up running in the 4.6s, but as far as the on-the-field drills, the ball skills and the transition skills were really good. So Mikey Victor of Alabama State is another name that I was really surprised by throughout the pre-draft process. He helped himself a lot.
You see some of the HBCU smaller school guys, you see what you know, Joshua is doing with the Kansas City Chiefs. Any thoughts? I mean, I have two guys in particular, Willie Drew out of Virginia State and then Joshua Hayward out of Benedict. Your thoughts?
Yeah, both really good players. I had an opportunity to see Willie actually at the Senior Bowl. And you could tell early on that he did have some struggles just because whenever you're talking about a D2 or a FCS player that's making that bump up, playing against that upper echelon type of talent, it's an adjustment period for them. But I thought he steadily got better throughout the week. And he really helped himself at the combine too, running in the 4.4s. Speed is always a big question that you want to see, or a check box that you want to see answered from those smaller school types of players. And he definitely was able to do that.
And then Jordan, tell us how we can view your current mock draft, and your next one comes out, what you said, April 23rd, correct?
Yeah, so you can find my work along with my colleagues, Phil Yates, Mel Kiper Jr., as well as Matt Miller on ESPN.com. We have stuff that is coming out every single day on ESPN Plus, and then my full 7-round mock draft, all 257 picks, comes out on April 23rd. So be on the lookout for that.
Check him out on social media. Jordan Reed, NFL draft analyst, former North Carolina Central quarterback and assistant coach, is on the other side of things now, doing his thing in with ESPN and in the NFL, the NFL draft, as he joins us here on Box to Row. Jordan's been a good little while, man. You hit me to something that I had forgotten about in terms of us talking until you reminded me, and I remember now. I appreciate it, my brother. Hey, look, you're doing a phenomenal job. Continued success in all you do.
Thank you, as always. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Donald. Keep doing what you're doing. I follow very closely. Even though we go lengths of times without talking to each other, I follow the HBCU stuff very, very closely. It's all near and dear to my heart. I love seeing these athletes getting exposures just because they deserve all these opportunities.
Jordan is right. The players do deserve the opportunity, do deserve the exposure. And I mean, you're talking about Jordan Reed, a guy, you heard him, how he got into this position, knew the game. It was a very smart quarterback, a solid quarterback when he played at North Carolina Central, became an assistant coach, did his thing there. Again, as he mentioned, moved on into analysis, right? And now is you've seen him quite a bit here recently on ESPN, knows what he's talking about, right? Can not only analyze the bigger players, right? And can really analyze the guys at the quarterback position, because while he's played the position in college, you can talk about higher level or whatever you want to talk about. I mean, it's not a lot of the coaches that you see and a lot of the really good coaches that you see didn't necessarily play at a super high level in college. So look, he can analyze those guys and does a really, really good job at it. And so glad to have him on the program to talk about some of the HBCU players and the overall draft, and really was interested because, I mean, New England at that number 3 pick is an interesting pick. What are, in fact, the Patriots under new head coach Gerard Mayo going to do? You know, I was looking at some of the top HBCU potential draftees, right? And so I went to from CBSSports.com. They have number 10, Joshua Hayward, the defensive back from Benedict. We talked a little bit, and you heard Jordan talk a little bit about him. At number 9, Willie Drew, who he really spoke highly of. Willie Drew is coming out of Virginia State, may have a real opportunity. And we're seeing, you know, Joshua Williams with the Chiefs is still kind of learning, but he's got 2 Super Bowl championships under his belt, and he's getting quite a bit of playing time. At number 8, Jordan Tolles, the defensive back from Morgan State, and Morgan really had a top-notch defense last season. At number 7, Evan Gregory, the offensive lineman from Norfolk State. Number 6, Tariq Stewart, the offensive tackle from North Carolina A&T. At number 5, Noah Washington, linebacker, defensive end, again from Morgan State. The number 5 prospect, according to CBS, HBCU prospect in the draft, in the National Football League draft, according to CBSSports.com. Number four, Jarvion Howard, the running back from Alcorn State. We know what he did in 2022, maybe not as much this past year, but he transferred in from Syracuse, and I think the scouts really, really like what he brings to the table. You heard Jordan mention Davius Richard. The guy can just play, and hoping that his recovery from the injury will go fine and he'll get his opportunity to play in the National Football League. Sundiata Anderson, defensive lineman from Grambling State, who we're scheduled, as a matter of fact, to talk to next week right here on Box to Row. And you heard him mention Mickey Victor, the defensive back from Alabama State, who's ranked number one by CBSSports.com as the number one HBCU NFL prospect. Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. We've got plenty more of the show still to come.
More of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way. Find the Box to Row YouTube page for conversations with stars like Omari Hardwick, Brandy, Michael Strahan, and with some of our favorite sports guests over the years. Box to Row. Box to Row. Box to Row.
Do you feel like the cost of car ownership has gotten out of control? Take charge by refinancing your auto loan today. One call to Rate Genius can save drivers an average of $1,200 per year. The loan specialists at Rate Genius have helped people for more than 20 years replace high-interest auto loans, lower their payments, and spend less in interest. Rate Genius works with over 150 lenders to find you the most competitive terms. Customers lower their rate an average of 3 percentage points. That's huge savings. It's absolutely free to apply for refinance through Rate Genius, and when you refinance your auto loan, you won't owe a payment for 45 days. Make the 5-minute no obligation call today and get on your way toward affordable car ownership. Call 800-958-0341. 800-958-0341. That's 800-958-0341. Rate and payment values are calculated by using the average savings for customers from January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2022. Not all applicants qualify for a loan or rate savings. Actual offer terms, including APR, are determined at the time of your application based on credit worthiness. Value of the vehicle on term and other factors.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed joining us in the last couple of segments here to talk some NFL draft here on Box to Row. And you can react to anything that Jordan had to say on our X account at Box to Row, BOXTOROW. We're going to switch gears and talk some NBA as we're winding things down and getting ready for the play-in tournament. When you look at the East, it's all about the Celtics. And I'll tell you what, the Bucks have an opportunity. What I think is interesting, a couple of things that I think interesting when you talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. Number one, Giannis Antetokounmpo going down, but he's going to miss he'll miss the next three games, a non-contact injury. Turns out from the reporting but it's not the Achilles. And the Achilles is in good shape, is what was said out of the report. And so we'll see moving forward. But what's interesting is the Bucks. That happened against the Celtics. The Bucks beat the Celtics pretty handily. And then I'm trying to remember who the Bucks beat the next night. The Magic. I mean, the Bucks handed the Magic. I mean, really took care of the Magic. And it's like, okay, what kind of Bucks team do we have? You know, we had Mike Wallace on the program a couple of last week, as a matter of fact. And I'm just still trying to make, I don't know what to make exactly of the Bucks. It just seems like when Damian Lillard and Antetokounmpo play, it's not as great as you would think it would be. But when Damian Lillard plays at least the last couple of games, I mean, the Bucks have been really, really good to do it without Antetokounmpo. And Orlando is a solid team. It's not like, you know, Orlando's not a great team, but Orlando at the same time won't be in the play-in tournament either. I think what we'll see, what we'll learn, we'll, because the report is that Antetokounmpo will miss the next three games, but I'm not sure what we'll know beyond that. Now, of course, we'll have some time to kind of rehab and heal a little bit. But let's just say there's no Antetokounmpo moving forward. Okay, it's still a solid team. It's still got good players. It's still got Damian Lillard. And I think we'll really see Doc Rivers. We'll really see what his coaching ability is about. Again, I didn't understand the Bucks and firing the previous coach, hiring Doc Rivers, and then signing him to a three-year deal. Like, I didn't get that, especially coming off what he's done the past couple of years, including last year with Philadelphia. These 3-1 leads and these 3-2 leads. And I mean, look, the players play. It's no doubt. I mean, you've got to have – football is more about the X's and O's than is basketball, okay? So you want to have – at least in the NBA, you've got to have guys that are more than just X's and O's guys. Okay, you want to have those guys too, but they have to be able to manage big personalities. And I think Doc Rivers can do that. He has done that, you know, but I think he's still living off of what happened in Boston when Boston won the NBA championship. What was that, back in 2008? I mean, that was so long ago, and not much has happened since then in terms of winning. Some of that's on the players, but it's going to fall back on the coach. And I guess really Milwaukee didn't really see it that way. They saw it more of, okay, it was more about the players. We can bring him in. Because didn't start well. Didn't Milwaukee start like 0-4, 0-5 under Doc Rivers, then started to play well, then not so much. They've had this up and down deal. They weren't playing well. Antetokounmpo goes down. They take care of the Bucks, take care of the Celtics, and then take care of Orlando on Wednesday. So I don't quite know what to make of the Bucks, but we'll see. We'll see what Doc Rivers is able to get out of this group moving forward, really, with or without Antetokounmpo. That's what I'm looking at. When I'm looking at these NBA playoffs, I'm really looking at what the Bucks are going to be able to do. Because really, to me, it's the Celtics, then the Bucks, then there's everybody else. I mean, the Knicks aren't 100%. They are playing well, but they're not 100%. You know, the Cavaliers, I am interested in seeing the Cavaliers. I think the Cavaliers could make some noise. I shouldn't have said everybody else, but I think the Cavaliers will make some noise. The Pacers, they made the move at the, you know, they made the move to get Siakam. It hasn't panned out as I think they thought it would have. The 76ers is going to be interesting with Embiid now back and hopefully healthy. What kind of noise can Philadelphia make? I don't know if Philadelphia can make a lot of noise this year. We'll see. But it's, you know, and then you've got the playoff situation in the Eastern Conference, which, you know, right now you're talking about possibly the Pacer, and the Magic are still in that deal too, in terms of possibly, right? They'd have to fall off the face of the earth, you know, but, you know, something drastic I think would have to happen with only a couple of, you know, I mean, you know, I think the Magic are in pretty good shape, but I mean, you're talking about the Heat, the Bulls, the Hawks, you know, what's going to happen with those teams? I think the Western Conference is a lot more intriguing, especially when you talk about the play-in game, because you can see if you watch some of the NBA commercials, they're really advertising that play-in piece, because who knows if the likes of the Warriors, the Lakers, the Suns, right, will even be in the playoffs. So not the play-in portion, but in the playoffs. So I think there's a lot of real questions right there that really, really need to be answered. And we've got a handful of games really left to answer those questions. The Nuggets and the Timberwolves, who actually gains the number one spot there, we'll see. I mean, I think that's super important for whoever comes out of the play-in tournament. If you've got to play the Nuggets, forget about it. If you've got to play the Timberwolves, there's an opportunity there. I think the Timberwolves are good, but I want to see, because again, I saw last year what happened with the Kings. The Kings were young and weren't ready to really take that next step, lost to Golden State. No shame in that. That's a veteran Golden State team, right? And then the Kings are, still part of the play-in scenario this year. So I want to see the Timberwolves have been really, I mean, the Timberwolves finished much better this year than the Kings did last year. But again, with the youngness of the team, first time really, the Timberwolves this year have more experience than the Kings did last year. So, look, I think the Timberwolves can make some noise, but I still want to see what that looks like. But I think the Nuggets clearly to me, at least to me, are the best team in the West. Look, got to say congratulations, finally, to Dr. Dick Barnett, who will be inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame. It's been a long time coming. We had Dr. Barnett on the program back in 2017. He was trying to get some recognition for the three straight NAIA national championships that Tennessee A&I, then known as Tennessee A&I, now Tennessee State, had won, coached by John McClendon. And remember, when you go into the Naismith Hall of Fame, it's your cumulative as a basketball player, high school, college, and the pros. And I think with the cumulative, good pro player, two championships, three championships at Tennessee A&I, definitely deserved to be in the Naismith Hall of Fame. Before I get out of here, the big news for the week, O.J. Simpson passing away on Thursday at the age of 76. And what I most remember, didn't have a chance to really remember O.J. Simpson when he played in the National Football League. For those that don't know, O.J. Simpson, Pro Football Hall of Famer, one of the greatest running backs to ever play. I actually remember as a child reading a book about him growing up in San Francisco. But by that time, I think his playing days may have been over. What I will remember the most, the murders of both Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, and that OJ was acquitted of those murder charges. I remember the trial absolutely riveted the nation. I was working at the Library of Congress. This is back in 94 when the trial was going on. We had just come off, 2 or 3 years ago, the beating of Rodney King. And I can remember when the verdict came out. I mean, there was a collective, no matter where you stood on it, in terms of, and again, I probably was about 20 years old or so when this happened, Black America was ecstatic about him being acquitted. Not about them, but about him being acquitted. And ever since then, it's just been, some stuff of his own doing. Of course, he went back to jail in 2007, 2008 for an attempted robbery, trying to get some of the items that he had to auction or he had to sell to because he lost in the civil suit. So he had to pay those families. So he's trying to get some of those items back. He went to jail and ended up getting out maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, something like that. O.J. Simpson passing away on Thursday at the age of 76. Look, my time is up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Jordan Reed for joining us today here on Box to Row for great content, podcasts, etc. Visit our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support Yo Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.
Yo.